Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's show is being brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, believers in good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Ooh, I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. It is a cold March day today. It's a good day for cooking. I know a lot of folks who go to the farmer's market, though, in the dead of winter, like right now, the middle of the winter, the doldrums, and there's only potatoes and maybe a head of cabbage and some sort of dried out looking kale left and some gnarly looking roots. And they feel a little bit less inspired. You know, it's not exactly the most vivid scene at the farmer's market these days, or for local food, for that matter. But I have a guest today who finds this cooking seasonally to be a fun, creative challenge, and it's also part of his whole philosophy in cooking. My guest today is not really a household name here in the States, but he is very much a celebrated, widely known chef in the UK, just across the pond. It is his first cookbook that just came out last year. It's called Gather. And it is the most, it is just a wonderfully bewitching cookbook I'm holding right now. And I think everyone would be really inspired to try their hand at some of his not very difficult recipes. So without further ado, let's hear from Gil Millers. He is the chef, chef, head chef at River Cottage, the TV series, and much more in UK. How are you, Gil? Are you there?
Hi there. Yeah, hey. Very well. Thank you.
Hi, thanks, Chef.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, and I'm glad you can make it here while you're in the U.S. for some touring for this book. So congrats, and I hope you're having an okay time here in this freezing weather.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a really nice week, actually. I came last Sunday, and I'm heading off this evening, but I've been in New York and Boston, and I'm just down in Washington at the moment.
Have you been treated to many wonderful meals around the States? Did you get to eat anything particularly fetching lately?
Yeah, I had an amazing lobster roll in Brooklyn, which was pretty amazing. I had a good meal at Mission Chinese in New York. And well, funnily enough, you were just mentioning the farmer's markets. I just had a bit of breakfast down at the DuPont farmer's market in Washington. And that seems, there's a lot going on down there. That's a really nice farmer's market.
Really?
Lots of beautiful seasonal stuff on display there, and really busy, even though it was quite cold. There was a lot of people there.
Oh, that's exciting. So I haven't been there, but all right. Well, you know, this is your first book, Gather, and I love that you say it's sort of like a double entendre. It's about gathering the ingredients around you, but also gathering around the table. And why did you decide to sort of hinge upon this word for this cookbook? It seems like an important part of your philosophy.
It seemed to have lots of different meanings. It seemed to sum up a nice approach to food and cooking and being together as people. There is quite a movement towards getting out in the countryside and going foraging, as it were, for wild food. But that was not necessarily the meaning of the title. It was really more so about getting back to the source, trying to find out, you know, where some of the ingredients you're eating come from, and sharing food together, you know, around the table as we all do, but probably a bit too little. We should all be doing it a bit more. So yeah, it represents quite a few different things, and it's a one-liner. sounds pretty good.
Yeah, let's get back to the foraging movement you mentioned, because you also right in your introduction, you actually say, I implore you to have a go at gathering a little of your food for free straight from the hedgerow or the seashore. A simple walk with a basket in hand may well turn out to be a productive adventure, giving you the basis for a satisfying supper. So, you know, foraging is a movement right now, or it's getting more popularity in actually worldwide.
Sure.
But how, you know, you also write in the introduction, you recall finding mushrooms as a child and cooking them. And you said it was amazing that they were edible and they tasted great. They weren't poisonous. You guys didn't die. But you always remember that whenever you eat mushrooms now. So do you have any tips, like any practical sort of how-tos for getting out there and maybe grabbing something from the seashore? I was trying to wrap my head around what I would grab along the seashore or elsewhere.
Yeah, well, for sure. The seashore is an incredible place to find wild food. You know, not only are there a huge variety of seaweeds that are not only edible, but really quite delicious, but there's also lots of different varieties of wild sea greens, and shoreline plants that can be eaten as well. I mean, the key is to know how to identify them. And I'm no kind of scientist, but I can identify the key ingredients that I like to cook with, and some of the seaweeds are very, very good, and not only very, very tasty, but nutritionally, you know, they're incredibly good for us, and it's a hugely untapped source of free food,
and flavor.
I would definitely encourage people to pick up a handbook, you know, a guide to,
okay,
and get out there and have a look. Without question, yeah.
Yeah, I think that seaweed is something that, you know, it's you know, if we're gonna catch fish, or you know, catch oysters, or catch, you know, shellfish and living things from the ocean, why not grab some seaweed too? It seems like a little, you know, no brainer. But I remember one time I did pick and forage seaweed from the shore, and it freaked people out. They're like, "You're eating that?" Anyway. But I think it's encouraging to hear chefs like you talk about this now. And also, okay, let's go back to the mushrooms now, because you're much older and wiser than your child self who picked some foraged wild mushrooms. Do you have any, you know, would you just say sort of like keep to the guidebooks, find a guide to help you not choose poisonous mushrooms, or is there places that are better?
You know, I would suggest you go out mushroom hunting with caution, to be honest with you. You don't want to just pick anything and fry it up and put it on toast. You need to really know what you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, the best way to do that is to pick up a respectable field guide, which you can reference, and make sure that you're 100% comfortable that what you're picking is completely edible.
Yeah.
And when you get it right, you know, the results are quite fabulous.
Yeah,
Some of the best meals I've ever had have been as simple as some wild mushrooms fried in a little bit of butter with some garlic and parsley, piled on toast and eaten. You know, it's incredibly rewarding, because you haven't just gone to the shops and exchanged money for, you know, some ingredients. You've you've spent some time outside, you've wandered around, and you've actually kind of been involved in getting those ingredients in a realist mm-hmm. sense, and that is very rewarding when mm-hmm. you come home and you eat them, far more so than going to the supermarket. And that's the kind of message that runs throughout the book, is maybe if you get the chance every so often, you should try going back to the source and picking up some ingredients, whether that's in the wild or a farm gate sale, or like this morning, a really fantastic farmer's market, because mm-hmm. it always brings you that much closer to the source of what you're actually putting in your mouth, basically.
And I would imagine that having to read up on mushrooms to be able to identify the right one would give you a deeper appreciation and just knowledge and sort of a more intimacy with your ingredients through that.
Yeah, of course. You mm-hmm. anything like that where you're learning about the landscape and nature in general can't be a bad thing, mm-hmm. really.
It sounds so good.
We could all do with knowing a bit more about it and possibly showing it a bit more respect, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mushrooms are expensive, so that's one thing I'm going to try to get inspired into looking for. I did have a foraging
thank you.
Yeah. I had a foraging guide who once said, perhaps very helpfully, you know, just eat a little bit of something at first. Don't gorge and then see if you're okay. and then go forward. So I think that might be a good tip to take in.
Sound advice, I would say.
So you might hate this, but you are sort of a chef who is very on trend, and you're very of the moment. You're widely acclaimed, widely celebrated. In fact, Diana Henry, venerable food writer, cookbook author, who was actually on the show a few months ago, she wrote that you and your style of cooking through this book is the perfect expression of something food writers have been trying to define for the past three decades: modern British cooking. So what would you say that is, if you could put it in a nutshell? What is modern British cooking?
I think it means something different to everyone, really. But I suppose it's a simple approach to cookery. It's mm-hmm. it's displaying an understanding of ingredients, where they come from, how they've been produced, and to some extent, you know, the ethical story behind them, mm-hmm. and how that plays out, you know, in the dish and the environment in which it's served, really. I would say that modern British cooking is coming from a kind of educated platform, yeah. when it comes to what one chooses to cook and what one chooses not to. My food very much relies on maybe three or four seasonal ingredients.
Yeah.
It's not complicated. It's not in any way kind of molecular gastronomy by any stretch. You know, it is really pared back and fairly quick cooking. Mm-hmm. Its emphasis is on flavor and the textures and the enjoyment of the meal, as opposed to you know, the kind of fluff that surrounds a lot of food.
Fluff and foam. I think that, you know, it's really important to point out that your book, and I'm usually sort of hesitant about chef cookbooks, and, you know, because a lot of these things are not terribly easy for a home cook to produce. But your book is totally the opposite of that. It's it really is like three or four ingredients per recipe, and no crazy techniques, no weird additions like, chemical like stabilizers or something like that, which you might see in, you know, a chef cookbook. And it's yeah, so it's definitely not your average celebrity chef cookbook. It's so simple.
No. Yeah, I think that's important, you know, because people don't, you know, if they pick up a cookbook, they want it to be easy to follow. They want it to be, you know, they don't want it.
They want it to be
complicated.
Possible.
They want it to be fun and achievable, mm-hmm. and the recipes want to be, you know, doable. Mm-hmm. I was really lucky that every recipe has a lovely photograph with it, which I think helps the reader a lot to see what they're aiming at and are going to
that's
cook.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think as far as cookbooks go, you know, it's I'm pretty happy with it. What we did was broke the chapters up into food producing landscapes as opposed to a more kind of standard format, starters, mains, desserts. So each food producing landscape gives you a set of ingredients which go on to be to inform the recipes, as it were. And you got these. We had this lovely opportunity to illustrate these landscapes very beautifully with Andrew Montgomery, who's the photographer I've been working with for a few years now. It's a nice book to look at.
It definitely is.
So if you're even if you bought it for that reason.
I mean, and just to give you know, listeners a taste of it, the chapter about seashore. We were just talking about forage stuff, but, you know, like a typical recipe, I'm looking at the samphire and shrimp with butter and mace. So it's just whole shrimps head on. Looks like it's just sautéed with these samphire, which are also called sea beans here sometimes. Anyway, it's a sea vegetable.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a sea vegetable. It kind of almost looks like a succulent. And they're just sort of, you know, thrown together with some red pepper flakes, a little bit of squeeze of lemon, butter. It's just so simple, but it's very exciting. And
yeah.
And you know, there's like special ingredients.
Yeah, I mean, that's a kind of two or 3 minute dish, really.
Yeah.
Very, very quick to put together.
Yeah, nothing is too long. Let's talk a little bit more about these recipes and your cooking philosophy after a quick little commercial interlude. We'll be right back.
Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grains since 1978. When you mill whole grains, you get all three parts, the bran, the germ, and the endosperm. The bran, or the roughage, makes up about 14% of the whole grain. It's the outer skin of the edible kernel. It contains large amounts of B vitamins, some protein, trace minerals, phytochemicals, but most importantly, dietary fiber. The germ is only about 2.5% of the kernel. It's actually the sprouting section of the seed, what's going to grow into a plant. It's usually separated during milling process because it contains most of the fat and therefore has a shorter shelf life. The endosperm is the main energy storage unit of the seed. That's where the growing plant gets its energy before it can start photosynthesizing and making its own. It makes up a huge portion of the grain, about 83%, and it's the main source that's used for white flour. When you make white flour, you get rid of the germ and the bran and just have the white endosperm left. It contains almost all the carbohydrates. It also contains protein and iron and some of the other B vitamins as well. It's kind of what you classically think of when you're thinking of flour. So all that's there when you're milling with whole grains, but when you mill with whole grains, you also get the bran, which is the kind of roughage and gives that's what gives that kind of color to it. Also gives you extra fiber that helps you to be regular. And you also get the germ, which adds the fat and the flavor, which we all like from whole grains. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
All right, we're back on Eat Your Words, and I'm thrilled to be chatting with Gil Miller. He is the head chef of River Cottage. And Gil, tell us a little bit about, you know, for folks who haven't seen the cooking shows, and it's also a culinary series of classes, right? River Cottage? What's going on with what's going on in the world of River Cottage right now?
Well, we are based in the southwest of England. Mm-hmm. We're a 65-acre cookery school and farm, and we run all sorts of food-related events down at the farm. Everything from kind of beekeeping to vegetable gardening to butchery to smoking and curing, right through to kind of advanced cookery courses. It was set up by a guy called Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, who's a journalist and food writer and campaigner for Real Food. And I've been working with the company for about 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most amazing place to come and learn about good food and cooking, and I would urge you, you know, any of your listeners, if you're in the area in the UK, to come and have a look.
Oh gosh, I would
love
to.
Or at least check out the website.
Mm-hmm. Rivercottage.com. Is that
Rivercottage.net.
.net. Okay.
There's loads of information about what we're doing on there, and a whole list of the courses and some of our more recent campaigns and projects that we're working on. And, it's the most beautiful place just down in the county of Devon in England.
Devon. It's so interesting. It's so neat. I don't know why we don't have something like that here. Do you see any things like that here in the States? It sounds a little like Stone Barns, but... with a restaurant where they have a restaurant, Blue Hill at Stone Barns. They have many courses. Do you see any equivalents elsewhere? Because it's such a unique program, series, everything. Institute.
I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't seen anything quite like that over here. But I'm not that knowledgeable about exactly what sort of
it is
cookery
really
schools and so forth you have going on out here. but yes, you're quite right. There's a similarity between what Dan Barber's doing over here and what we're trying to do down at River Cottage. I know that Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, who I work with, is well known to Dan, and actually Dan's over in London at the moment doing a project called Wasted.
Oh yes,
which is a pop up
waste,
a pop up on top of Selfridges.
So cool.
Which I might be involved with later on in a month. So, a lot of respect for what he's doing.
And
in
you know,
particular.
And you can see that activism really plays into a lot of your education and special events and programming. In both, I think it sounds like you guys both are very heavily involved with your community and supporting the farms in the neighborhood and educating about them. So it's. It's a really unique institute, and I just think that it's exciting to see what's going on around the world in different parts, and I don't know, maybe we'll see some more projects like that over here. Do you have any plans to do any special events in the States for River Cottage, like, I don't know, pop-ups or what have you?
Currently, there's nothing in the calendar, but it would be fantastic if we got the opportunity. You know, we're only at the beginning of the year, really, so we've got, we've got some time to make some things happen.
Yeah.
And
cool.
it would be a pleasure. It would be a pleasure to get over here again and set up some projects that people could be involved with.
Hey, we'd love to support that at Heritage Radio. So how did you get involved as a chef? How did you get involved in River Cottage? And I know that you came into cooking a bit later. It wasn't something that you're always, you know, aspiring to do. Is that right? From a young age or something like that?
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I had worked in a few pubs when I was a youngster, just washing up and things. And I did find the whole atmosphere quite intriguing, but I was never planning to be a chef. It really just happened out of necessity, really. When I was just 18, wife and I had our first child, and I just fell into the kitchen because I needed the money, to be, to be perfectly honest. And it didn't take long before I realized that I actually quite enjoyed the cooking. And people were saying to me that what I was producing was quite tasty. So that kind of inspired me to think a bit more about it. And I started to read about food and cooking, and yeah, it turned into a real passion, which I've continued, and it's got me to where I am today. But obviously, my plan was never to be a chef. I was studying the arts and photography, and I suppose being a cook is quite artistic in many respects. So I suppose it follows a similar theme.
Yeah, that's wild. But
yes, it kind of. I have no formal training as such.
Oh wow!
It's all stuff I've picked up on the job.
On the job.
I think the great thing about being a chef is that you get to work with lots and lots of people, and particularly where I've been at River Cottage, you're constantly exposed to all sorts of experts and authorities on food and food production and cookery, and you get to work with these people on a daily basis. Tutors that come and teach various courses at the school, and it's a privilege, really, because you do learn a huge amount about not only cooking but everything that comes
producing
before
the
that
food
in
raising
regards to food and yeah. Everything, yeah, the principles and ethics behind the food we eat, really.
And that's so cool because, you know, as a restaurant diner or something, you know, watching a typical cooking show, you don't really get that. But when you have to do the sourcing and, you know, working, choosing producers to work with and tasting this and that, you know, you're forced to consider, and you have a greater depth of knowledge to the production of these foods. So it's really great that you guys share that and talk about that as an integral part rather than just sort of saying an apple is an apple. Ingredient is an ingredient. So it's cool to share that.
Absolutely. I think it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any like food, or cooking mentors? You were mentioning, you know, so many inspiring folks that, you've gotten to work with. Is there anyone who stands out or a few idols?
There's no one that stands out more than another person, to
really?
Be honest with you. As I said, I've been lucky to work with lots of talented chefs, lots of interesting people with fantastic views and ideas. But I've tried to take a little bit from everyone and kind of establish my own views and my own style in a way, and define my own approach to the food that I make, and I think that's better in a way to come up with your own set of philosophies when you're working, you know, day to day on something you really care about.
Right, there's a purity. I just want to point out some of my favorite recipes that I've been looking at and salivating over in this book. But you have a really great way of preparing. You have a really like sort of non-intimidating way of preparing fish in a lot of these dishes. It's just like just really simple, like a roasted whole fish with chunks of celery root all around it and mushrooms. I mean, who can't do that?
Yeah.
It's almost like you know, it's very rudimentary almost, but it looks wonderful. You know, no crazy techniques. And then there's this another whole slashed fish roasted with some chorizo, rosemary, and purple broccolini. So, you know, special ingredients here and there, but really simple preparations. I think that it's just so exciting to see, and I can't wait to cook some of these. Do you have a favorite dish from this book that you want to just kind of geek out about?
Gosh, that's a really good question. Do I have a favorite? I really like them all, to be honest. I mean, there's a beautiful oyster dish in the book, and it's It's very simple. You shuck the raw oysters,
mm-hmm.
and you put them in a bowl, and you pour over a very intense chicken stock that's been seasoned with salt and fresh chives, and it mm-hmm. poaches the oysters very lightly. But the combination of the oyster, the salinity of the oyster, the richness, with the chicken broth is really amazing.
I think that
would have to be a good one. It would be up there alongside maybe the brownies. There's a brownie recipe in there with.
Okay.
They're made with rye flour, but you also use bay leaves and orange in the mix, and it's incredibly
Whoa.
Fragrant and really, really good. There's a whole host of very simple yet delicious recipes that I'm really
so
fond
simple.
Of.
And so surprising, too. Who would have thought of, I found this oysters in chicken broth with chives, as simple as it sounds, but it just exciting and different, because who does that with oysters? So very, very cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing some time with us here at Heritage. I'm really excited to share this cookbook with a lot of folks, and hope everyone gets their hands on Gather by Gil Miller. And thanks so much for joining us, Gil.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and I hope to be back again
Excellent.
Sometime soon.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, have a great rest of your U.S. tour. And thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Ooh, I like the way you do. Took it so slow.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.